You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify and transform your life and your business today. I'm excited for today's guest. I've had the opportunity and the honor to hear her speak, be in her presence, and just really excited to have her share her story and dive deep into what her skills and her whole program that she offers to help you be able to transform your life. So I'm excited to welcome Sally Hogshead to Making Bank. And Sally skyrocketed to the top of the advertising profession in her early 20s. By the age of 24, she was the most award-winning advertising copywriter in the U.S. And her campaigns were for some of the most major brands in the United States: Mini Cooper, Nike, Godiva Chocolates, Coca-Cola, and they have fascinated millions of consumers. And then by the time she was age 27, she opened her first ad agency, and her work still hangs in the Smithsonian Museum in the American History. And so the really cool thing, she drew upon this remarkable branding legacy and developed the Fascination Advantage, which I've had the opportunity to take, so we'll dive in later on that. And it's the first algorithm to actually truly measure personal brands, unlike traditional personal assessments such as Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinder. Sally's test doesn't measure how you see the world, but how the world sees you. She frequently appears on national media, including NBC Today Show, The New York Times, and was named the number one brand guru in the world. Her practical marketing systems now lives inside organizations such as IBM, Twitter, the YMCA, as well as thousands of small businesses around the world. The science of fascination is based on Sally's decade of research with dozens of Fortune 500 companies and teams, as well as hundreds of small businesses and over 1,000 C-level executives as well. One of her newest books, Fascinate, How to Make Your Brand Impossible to Resist, is a New York Times bestseller. I know she launched a new book called How the World Sees You. There we go. And Sally is one of the only 172 living members of the Speakers Hall of Fame, which is the global speaking industry's highest award-winning profession of excellence. So Sally, I want to welcome you to Making Bank and so excited to have you here today.
I am excited to be here. Thank you for that awesome introduction.
And so I know one of the things, I think it was one of your first times I actually heard you speak in person, and it like totally took me down a whole nother path, was just the real raw vulnerability that you just opened up, and it was just, it went like all family and, who your family really was and just, what you were dealing with at that time. I think it just allowed me to really connect with you. So I was really excited to have you on the show to kind of explore, you and who you are, as well as said, dive into your background and how we can help other people out there.
What you just made is a really good one, that as entrepreneurs, we can't hide behind a facade. It's not like we can roll under our desk and curl up in a ball when the grenades start flying. And I think there's a role in vulnerability, both in business and in life, that in order for us to create authentic connections, it's important for us to be able to share parts of ourselves that that are so deeply rooted that it allows us to have a little heart and soul connection.
Sure. And I think that's amazing. And one of the biggest, I know even for myself, that's always something I struggle with, is like, all right, how, being vulnerable and just kind of letting it out there. And I've always, since then, I've tried to make that a part of what I do when I speak to people and really try to create some kind of connection through that, or even maybe just sharing pieces of that that will help somebody, hopefully.
Can I give you an example?
Sure.
Of that? Can I give you, so first I want to say, in a moment, we're going to be talking about your fascination advantage, and I'm going to explain to you exactly why sometimes for you personally, it can feel really uncomfortable for you to feel like you're bearing your soul. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But along the lines of what you were just saying, I had a realization recently that when you're able to look back on your past and all of a sudden there's a piece of your history that you thought was an isolated event that you suddenly realized was actually part of a chain reaction.
Sure.
Have you had that happen?
Oh, yeah.
When I was growing up, my dad was a doctor and he was a surgeon. And so I didn't get to see him very often over the course of the week because he was in surgery. But then on Sundays, I got to go with him and we would do rounds together at the hospital. So on a Sunday morning when I was in the fifth grade, we were going over the bridge. And I remember we were having this conversation about his job being a surgeon. And then everything went black. And I woke up later in a coma.
Oh, wow.
From a coma. And the memory that I have is my mom was spoon feeding me because I'd been in a horrible car accident with my dad. A tow truck smashed into the side of our car, wrapped around a telephone pole. And the grill of the tow truck smashed in my face and the windshield shattered. So it was just like shrapnel around my face. I hadn't gotten oxygen for a while, so they didn't know what the recovery was going to be like. And I did eventually start to recover, but the problem was the accident had cut all the nerves in my face. And specifically, you can probably still see my scars. So this part of my face was paralyzed. Wow. And it wasn't that I was visually embarrassed. It was that I couldn't smile. I couldn't connect with people. And so when I would talk to people, I couldn't effuse, I couldn't be myself. And so I wasn't able to create a connection. And it shut me down throughout my fifth and sixth grades. I decided it was just easier to not connect than to try to do this grotesque imitation of a smile.
Sure.
And I remember, have you ever had an experience in your childhood that it on a cellular level, it somehow changed your perception of who you are in the world and how to interact? I didn't even realize that was a significant event until I started working with entrepreneurs and I started seeing what happens when you put yourself out there in your business and then you lose a big client or the economy changes or suddenly somebody else's technology usurps your own. That feeling of just being so deeply shut down and unable to communicate. And that was really the genesis of why I began researching how do we communicate in a way that is so authentic that we don't have to experience that feeling of not being able to make a connection no matter who we are and how we communicate.
And that's, you know, and that's the truth. I know, I mean, just whether it was business failures or, you know, aligning myself with the wrong people and, you know, and just being totally let down.
It's crushing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and especially because when you're supposed to be in charge as a leader, a lot of times we make these big decisions and by definition, if you're going to walk the line, occasionally you're going to cross the line. And sometimes there are going to be things that you just simply got to roll the dice, you know?
Sure.
And sometimes you end up looking like a total rock star because it's like, man, look at that loop-de-loop I just did. And everybody's like, you're a genius.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you should have seen the 10 times I completely wiped out. So I guess that expanding on this new theme we just created of vulnerability, I think that's something that we really have to like live with every single day. Because when somebody makes the company wrong for something with customer service or a product that we do has a bug, it's like, oh, I want to go under my blanket.
And I guess, you know, as entrepreneurs and myself, especially, you know, type A and, you know, you're just focused on driven and everything else, I guess, you are as well as the people you work
yeah.
with. How do you, I guess, encourage or help people in that position be able to find that or be able to open up and have that, be able to like share that vulnerability with other people?
That's a really great question. I'm going to put the word vulnerability aside for a moment.
Sure.
We can get back to that. I've measured a million people with this assessment, the Fascination Advantage, to discover exactly that. What is the quality within somebody that allows them to communicate so authentically that they don't have to try to pretend, they're not rehearsing a script. When they go in, they feel confident. But we discovered that we could identify certain traits within the high performers. And specifically, we've measured 100,000 high-performing leaders within small businesses or entrepreneurs. And what we found, the high performers and their communication patterns, they do two things differently than the average performers. The first thing they do is high performers deliver a very specific benefit. So the benefit might be, if somebody's detail-oriented, they're really good at details, they hone in on details, they look for clients and projects where they can over-deliver on details. They don't try to be the big-picture, rah-rah, visionary brainstormer. On the other hand, with the high-performing entrepreneurs were doing, on the other hand, if they weren't good at details, they didn't get anywhere near details because for them that made them feel like they were getting in the weeds. On both of these types of kind of the ultra performers, the ones, many of whom you and I know in common, what the ultra performers were doing is they were both mostly type A, but they had different ways of communicating that. And sometimes that we think when somebody is, we have a classic mindset of the entrepreneur who's kind of this like eccentric genius, and they're very verbal, and they like to be able to jump right in. But the reality is a lot of the most successful ones that we studied tended to not want to jump into the spotlight, but instead they liked analysis. They liked to be meticulous. They wanted to really get in and craft and hone, and they were uncomfortable with those big leaps of faith.
No, I think that's true. I mean, and even for myself, I mean, to when I first started the show, you know, it wasn't like someone was like, oh man, I want to go out and to go do that. I forced myself to start it and thought, well, okay, I'm going to start connecting with the brightest and the best out there and just put myself out there. And
what was it like the first couple of episodes? Like, was it nerve-wracking?
Oh yeah. I remember. I mean, luckily I was working, I had a team I had hired in New York, so I would fly to New York. And so they would kind of help kind of guide me through from the video standpoint.
You had handlers. That's awesome.
But it was still rough. I mean, going in and I'd have to mentally just set myself up and, you know, and I'm always critiquing myself. Like, okay, am I doing this right? Am I looking right? Am I sounding right? You know.
Hold on just a moment. Makeup.
Yeah.
It's like, let me get my sound guy.
And so it was just, you know, I guess for me, just that was probably one of the hardest things, because I was never a extroverted person growing up. And, you know, I could always get along and I could have that circle of people and I could connect with people here and there, but never put myself out there. I would always listen and, you know, hear what people are saying and then interject as needed or whatever. And so over the last probably 4 or 5 years, when I just said, hey, I got to get out there, I got to get in front, mm-hmm. got to get a message out there, I just forced myself. I mean, going and connecting with a lot of people, some of the same groups that we're part of and different events and everything, and just making myself go up. And now it's just become so natural to go up and connect mm-hmm. and network.
Muscle memory.
Yeah. And so, so that was the hardest thing for me.
Can we turn the interview around? let me ask you a question, because I'm really interested in what you're saying, because so much of there's so much that you've created out in the world that is you have had enormously big public successes, and so what you're describing right now, I think, is new information for a lot of people that may not know that about you. So, what's a situation where you feel like, I have got this. I can totally over-deliver. I'm completely confident that I can step right in and play my A game. No, not necessarily the podcast or discussion. In your work, what would that be?
I think for me, part of it is really knowing that I know the information. So I have that, the confidence in the skill set. I mean, I know that I can do online marketing really well, and whether it's Facebook and funnels and all that kind of stuff, but I don't really, and everybody's like, I have like a whole viral podcast solution. So like when my podcast goes out, it used to take like 20 hours a week on average of me editing and doing this and transcribing and the whole process, and then creating the whole online sequence. So then I'm like, well, okay, how can I make this more automated? So I came up with this whole viral marketing sequence that eliminates basically 90% of the manual labor. And then I have just some VAs that do it. And it ends up being about 2 to 3 hours a week of work. But I've never really shared it with anybody. And everybody I talk to, they're like, oh, you should go out and market this and share it. But I guess, for me, it's like having that confidence that I know that it's like...
Right. Yeah. You establish the pattern. You sort of have a structure. And it's almost like automating, you know, like when we automate an email sequence, or when you can put something on that muscle memory you were talking about just a moment ago, finding those automations in our own lives.
Sure.
It makes it easier. And if I may, can I give a description for some of the reasoning behind why you have that emotional experience when you communicate?
Definitely, yeah. Always interested in learning.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned at the very beginning was what I measure is not how you see the world. There's Myers-Briggs and DISC and StrengthsFinder can tell you how you see the world. What I measure is the opposite. It's how does the world see you, and specifically, how does the world see you at your best? So how are you most likely to add value? And I'm going to show you on a chart. I'm going to show you you.
Did you pull mine up?
Yeah, I did. I totally did.
Nice. Awesome.
I was stalking you online.
That's all right.
Okay, so the book has a mirror on the front because it is showing you how the world sees you. But let's take a look now at your result. When you took the fascination advantage, what we learned is that you have primary mystique.
Yeah.
You're mystique right there. Right. Now, mystique is the language of listening, and people who score high on mystique tend to be great at analytical problem solving. They like to be able to be focused. They don't like being fragmented. They're uncomfortable with a whole bunch of touchy-feely. They don't really want to micromanage other people. They sort of want to think independently and then come back with a solution. Your secondary advantage, in other words, the way in which you are next most likely to add value, is power. Right. Power is the language of confidence. Power is about being an authority, being in a leader, wanting to be in a position of control, but also not shying away from being able to take charge of a group, even when things get tough. So what this means when we look according to your archetype, you are primary mystique, secondary power, and the name of your archetype, which is another way of saying your personal brand, is veiled strength.
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
Here's what I love about working with the veiled strength. The adjectives that describe the veiled strength are realistic, intentional, and to the point. Realistic, intentional, and to the point. So of those three adjectives, which one would you say best describes how you are able to make a difference, how you're able to add value? Intentional? Hold on.
That's okay.
Realistic, intentional, and to the point.
I know when I talk, I'm to the point. I mean, that's a lot of times friends, you know, like my one friend, oh, you know, Vinny Fisher.
So yeah. I was just watching your interview with him.
Oh, nice.
Studio. I love Vinny.
So we were just up at his mastermind in Cleveland probably a couple weeks ago. And he was just like, you know, he's like, Josh will just call me up and he kind of chats for a second. And then he's just like, hey, I need this. Da, 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 da.
Text? Are you one of those? Are you a one word texter?
Sometimes, yeah. What a few word texter or whatever, yeah. But
how about emojis? Do you like a lot of do you use a lot of smiley faces?
I don't. I mean, I use some, but not like overly. So like one here and there, or not like a ton, but yeah, just on an average basis.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So okay. 30 minutes before we were going to be talking, I received a text. Was the text from you or was it from somebody on your team?
Was it the reminder? That's actually all automated.
So first of all, that's a great example of outsourcing your emotional connection. And I sent it to my assistant, Kate, and I was like, this is fantastic because it's totally low touch. So that's an example of being to the point, that you've removed some of what for you were probably extraneous steps along the way.
Sure.
So I take it a step further. If you were going to go into a meeting, let's say it's a pitch or it's a big speech. What for you would be an example of a time when you want to play at your absolute best and you need to be seen at your highest value?
Usually when I get up and present or talk in front of a group.
Yeah.
So I know when I've done it, I'm really good, but I don't put myself out there to go do it as often.
Well, that's why, you know, in those situations when we really want to make a great impression and we really want to add value and make a difference for the people with whom we're communicating, that's the time when a lot of times we freak out and we start to feel the most stressed. And the problem is that when we don't feel confident, our brain gets a blast of epinephrine, the saliva dries up, and unconsciously the person that's listening to us, they start to feel uncomfortable too. Their stomach clenches and they back off. And in fact, there's a name for this in linguistics. It's called wet mouth.
Nice.
How's that for a show note? So when I was researching fascination, the science of fascination, I wanted to understand what makes somebody fascinating in communication.
And, sure.
And linguist told me this great piece. He said, what you don't realize is that your saliva cues are incredibly telling to the person that you're talking to, even though their brains are not consciously recognizing it. So I'll give you an example. Marilyn Monroe, she always had a wet mouth. And
right.
So when she spoke, she had a really low voice. So it sounded like pillow talk, even when it was happy birthday to you. And it's kind of these unconscious cues that allow us to feel more confident. So back to where we were starting, we were talking about being to the point.
Right.
As you can tell, to the point is not my fascination advantage. Being to the point, if you know that you can go into a meeting or a presentation or any situation, even a first date, and you know that not only do you want to be confident, but you have to be confident in order to close this deal.
Sure.
If you can say to yourself, there's one thing I need to do in this meeting above everything else is that I need to be to the point. I don't have to be effusive. I don't have to try to be the funny guy. I need to be the to the point guy. And in doing that, I'm going to create confidence and connection with the person that I'm talking to. And that's coming back to what we were talking about a moment ago about high performers. That what the high performers do differently is they have this specific benefit. And you can think about it like a specialty. That was the second point. First point, high performers deliver a specific benefit. Second point is they have a specialty. So you might even think your specialty is that you deliver to-the-point communication or to-the-point strategies, to-the-point ideas. And so if you kind of carry that around, sort of like an internal tagline or a positioning, a market positioning for yourself, it's going to be a lot easier for you to differentiate yourself. I would never be defined as Sally to the point hogshead because that's not how I add value. That's not how my books go. It's not how my speaking goes. But I can deliver value in ways that would be uncomfortable for you.
Sure.
For example, it's really easy for me to, when I meet people, I like to connect with them. I love to be able to try wildly new things all the time. I feel locked in by a rigid process. And so if you and I were working together on a team, that's why we would make a great pair. Because I would be coming in, Josh, I just had this great idea. What if we did this? Here, I've got 100 different ways to do it. And you would be able to say, you know, first of all, calm down. And second of all, let's think this through so we can come up with one right answer instead of doing a million things at one time.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
One of the things that I learned from my branding career is that the truly great brands, the challenger brands, the underdog brands that are doing cool, aggressive stuff, they don't try to have a lot of messages. They focus on having messages that will unquestionably stand out. So, for example, I was part of the team that launched the Mini Cooper in the United States. Mini had a really small advertising budget compared to the VW Beetle. So what the agency did, we focused on just doing a few media buys, but making them really cool so that people wanted to tear it out of the magazine or take photographs of the billboard and send it home. So I remembered that when I was creating my business card. And if the name of your company is How to Fascinate, you can imagine it.
Right.
So we were talking about the advantages a moment ago. This is what my business card, let me see if I can get there. This is what my business card looks like. At the top, awesome. It says, how do you fascinate? And then it has the 7 different options that match this. So you can see it's the exact same thing. And when I meet you, Josh, if the question is, how do you fascinate? Then I would come down the list and I would peel off, you listen with care.
Okay.
Misty.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I would say the second way you fascinate is you lead with authority. So if the two things that you absolutely must do when you communicate, you must listen with care and lead with authority. You don't have to do all of these things.
Right.
You've got to hone in as a specialty. And I'll tell you a little side note. My business card cost $2 each.
Sure.
And when I told my team that we were going to do this, they were like, you know, are you freaking crazy? We can track $48 for every business card
we
print. Because here's something that's really important for us to know as entrepreneurs, especially when we're trying to compete in a crowded, distracted world. It's not about having the most messages. It's about having the messages that add the most value and are going to be the most likely to be passed along. So if I meet somebody and I say, wow, you fascinate me with mystique and power, then suddenly this becomes a souvenir. And I'll tell you a cool little piece of research that's helpful for us to remember when we're marketing. As part of our studies, we asked men and women, if you could be the most fascinating person in the room, how much would you be willing to pay for that? If you could be the most fascinating person in the room. People were willing to pay $318 a month which is more than the average car payment.
Right.
Think about this.
Wow.
Women were actually willing to pay more to be the most fascinating person in the room consistently than they paid for food and clothes combined. So here's the learning. Instead of trying to be fascinating, find ways to make your customer or your client feel fascinating. And I think for you, the way you, I mean, you're obviously, everybody fascinates in a different way. And the way you fascinate is you're the veiled strength and you're intentional and strategic and to the point. But if you can help the people that you're working with, help them understand what makes them fascinating, then all of a sudden they feel a connection with you. And it's kind of coming back to the vulnerability that we were talking about in the beginning to kind of turn it away. That's why my business card doesn't talk about me. It talks about the other person.
Right. I gotcha. And that's awesome. It is interesting. We kind of think on that same path is my I have the black metal business cards. And so, So every time I hand one to somebody, they're like, you're right. And so they're like, oh, and people I meet, you know, and see, and then like, I'll see them 6 months or a year later. They're like, I still have that. It's sitting right, whatever, blah, 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 in my drawer here
it's
on
TSA,
my desk. I know that's cool to see that, you know, with your card and stuff, and it creates that connection point, as you mentioned.
Would you like to see another example?
Definitely.
Okay. One of the things that I learned early on in advertising is that you don't want to talk to everybody because then you end up talking to nobody, right? And the same is true. Like you have a choice. You can either have the biggest budget or you can be the most fascinating. If you don't have the biggest budget in your category, do not try to talk to everybody. You must be fascinating in some specific way. For better or for worse, I was born with the last name Hogshead. And what I found that it's a very polarizing last name. People think I made it up. Yesterday I was on a briefing call and the client kept calling me Sally Hogsbreath. And it's sort of like once you get halfway into the conversation when they've already said it like three times,
right?
Okay, I'm just not going to say anything. But so here's what I did strategically. I decided that I wanted to be polarizing, that the people who reached out to connect with me and with my company, that we were very specifically trying to alienate certain people so that the people that would love us would really, really love us. So we could attract our ideal client. So at the bottom of my business card, first of all, I have a hog on stationery. And at the bottom, it draws upon something that my dad told me when I was young. He said, the last name Hogshead really isn't that bad. A hogshead is a barrel that holds 62 gallons. So my business, my stationery says, a hogshead is a barrel that holds 62 gallons. So what's your last name, smartass? And when I put that, and it was on the website, and this is an important thing for all of us as entrepreneurs to remember, we have to find specific ways that we're polarizing so that we can be fascinating.
That's awesome. And I think I looked at the time. I'm like, holy cow, how's it been 30 minutes? there's like so much more that I wanted to cover. So I'll definitely have to have you back so we can dive deeper.
I have a gift that I want to be able to give to
for
the
sure.
folks.
Yeah, tell us where we can find you. And I'd love to hear what the gift is. And that's exciting.
When you and I were talking before, we were talking about this assessment, the Fascination Advantage. And we created a special code that's just for you, just for the listeners. And here's how people can take the Fascination Advantage and find out how the world sees them. They go to howtofascinate.com/you, YOU, howtofascinate.com/you. And they're going to put in a code. I'm going to ask you to guess what the code is. It starts with an F and ends with an R.
Guess my last name, Felber. And we have the link right over here to the side, so everybody can just click the link and go right there.
So then they'll be able to take it for free, and they're welcome to share it forward and take it with their team, so they can find out, are they a veiled strength like you? Are they a catalyst like me?
Oh, awesome.
Or one of the other archetypes?
Right. Oh, that's an awesome gift. I mean, I remember taking the Fascination quiz, and it was exciting to really start. Start seeing everything pop up, and you're like, oh wow, what's this mean? And it's cool because you've integrated like videos that talk about each step along in what it, how it interact or how you see that and how you can utilize that in what you're doing. So that's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm excited to be able to share. And Josh, you and I can we can talk about what people's results are, and if they want to, they can be posting it in the comments, because it's always great to see how other people fascinate, so that you can see yourself in context.
Awesome. Well, Sally, it's an honor to have you on Making Bank
Thank
today.
You.
We definitely have to sync back up so we can go deeper and grab more cool information to share with everybody. So
thanks so much for having me join you today.
Awesome. Guys, you've been watching Sally Hogshead. Make sure you are taking notes. If not, rewind, go back and watch. There was so much information that we covered. I mean, I'm just going to have to go back and watch it myself to take some more notes, as well as dive in deeper and really learn more about what Sally's been talking about today. So, Sally, again, thank you for coming on Making Bank, and an honor to have you on today.
Thank you.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.